Nurses and Hypochondriacs, the podcast that brings nurse experts, patients, and hypochondriacs together to discuss hot topics in healthcare. And here is your host, Ercilia Pompilio.
Here we are again, nurses and hypochondriacs. Welcome to another episode. And today we're going to be recording our part two of Cut It or Leave It on circumcision, which is such a hot topic lately, such a hot topic. But I'm very excited to bring on my guests. I love all my guests. I have the most amazing guests that come on this show. They're so talented and their bios are amazing. And I'm happy to bring on Dr. George Denniston. He's a graduate of Princeton, the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, and Harvard School of Public Health. He's a former associate medical director of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America and a retired professor in the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Washington. He created DOC to eradicate illegitimate practice of partial penile amputation circumcision because it not only harms future American men, it has harmed the medical profession dramatically. Welcome, Dr. George Denniston.
Thank you. And we should say that DOC stands for Doctors Opposing Circumcision, which many of your colleagues may not know.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, your history with circumcision, how you started this organization?
Well, briefly, I got involved when one of the intactivists sent me some cases and some children who'd been harmed. And I realized immediately that not only did it harm children, but it harmed the medical profession. And the proof of that is the Gallup polls in 1965 to 1995 showed a decline in trust in American doctors from 95% to 27%. It was a tremendous sea change of loss of trust in doctors. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that 150 million American couples had to say no to the doctors about circumcision.
Go ahead.
I decided we need to fight fire. And so we wanted to make sure that people understood that although some doctors were committing an atrocity against their children, other doctors opposed it very violently. And that's where we're coming down. We are in the process of eradicating this procedure from the face of the earth. No one, and especially not a doctor, has the right to do this to anyone, any other person, without their fully informed written consent.
So good thing you bring that up. Since the first podcast that I did with the rabbi, and of course he was pro, I have been asking many men, many grown men who are in their 30s and 40s, about circumcision. You know, I mentioned the podcast, and almost all of them, I will have to say all of them that were circumcised had said they wish they had a choice. You know, they wish that they made the choice and not their parents. So, which is very interesting to me. What do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. That's the basic point. It's a basic human right to keep your body. And of course, this is a normal part of your body and no one has the right to take it off without your permission. So of course, men are very upset. In fact, they are sometimes enraged about the fact that this has been done to them. And they're not at all happy about it.
Right. In clinic for me, I have been practicing as a pediatric nurse for about 22 years, pediatric nurse practitioner since about 2005. And I used to assist in a lot of circumcisions. I used to work in the nurseries, and I was the one who had to bundle up the baby and take it to the nursery, strap the baby down on all fours. You know, I don't think people understand or know how this is done, you know, because it seems very barbaric and the tools that they would use. You know, did you used to ever do circumcisions yourself?
Yes, but you're doing a good job of describing what's going on. I did one circumcision and I felt I was being treated the way doctors treat unsuspecting parents. And so I was not taught how to do it. I was just sent up there to do it. And I've never done another one.
You bring up a good point, because I remember a lot of the doctors that I would assist, either they were OBGYNs or they were pediatricians. And some of them had never been trained. Like, they kind of looked like they didn't know what they were doing. They looked very nervous. They would not anesthetize the baby. Some would go ahead and give a local anesthetic, whether it be a cream or some type of injection, which would probably be lidocaine. Or they did this weird study once, and I didn't have time to look up the study, where if you gave a baby sugar water, the baby would have no pain during a circumcision. I don't know who did that or who figured that out, but that was the saying for a while. But yeah, and sometimes these doctors, I mean, they would do a terrible job, and they don't know that this poor baby, this is what their penis is going to look like for the rest of their life. I mean, sometimes it would be jagged. Sometimes the father would look at it and say, hey, you know, what's going on here? Why does the penis look like that? There's too much foreskin that was cut off. Now there's nothing that I could do. I'm left holding like the bag, literally. And the doctor's like gone, you know, and they probably would never go back to that doctor and ask him, hey, you know, what did you do? What happened? You know? So,
well, this what you just described about the sugar water is a good example of the fact that there are studies in the literature that have gotten in there that are totally ridiculously false. I mean, sugar water absolutely does not mean the child goes through without pain. Another thing is that doctors talk about the baby going to sleep, but actually the baby goes into a coma. So in that sense, they could argue that he's not feeling pain because he's dissociated completely and going into a coma.
I love the term that you used, dissociated, because when babies dissociate, and now they're doing lots of studies on trauma and dissociation, they still have that trauma. I mean, people don't think babies remember anything, but they do, you know, and it's like it kind of sticks with them, and who knows where it will come up in their life and how that trauma will manifest.
Well, very good, because, you know, the Me Too movement, we want to try to reduce sexual harassment for women and men. And if we want to do that, we have to realize this. Abusers, all abusers have a history, almost all abusers, everyone knows this, have a history of being abused. And so one of their histories is a doctor sexually assaulting that child. And so then when he grows up, he assaults women because he blames his mother because she's the only person he knows. And then he translates that out to all women. And they have no respect for women, and they abuse them. And now I can be sure to tell you that not all of those people who've been abused are abusers. But if you have an abuser, he almost invariably has a history of having been abused. And this is one of the abuses that we have to get rid of if we're going to see any reduction in the in sexual harassment.
I agree. That's an excellent point you're bringing up now. And just now I'm seeing studies on this, you know, and there's been, like you said, the Me Too movement. And we also have the Olympic scandal with Dr. Nazar, and he just got, like, he has to pay over $500 million. I don't know what it is. I think the city of Detroit, I'm not exactly sure. I was just reading the media today. They has to pay back money to these victims that had come forward. And I think it's over 300 victims that were complaining of this abuse, the sexual abuse, and nothing was ever done. But
that's right. That was the big question. Why wasn't something done sooner? And
exactly.
That is the question I'm asking now about circumcision. Why haven't we done something sooner about this, that doctors are committing an atrocity on a daily basis and no one has done anything about it yet?
It's true. So what is your perspective? Why hasn't anything been done? I mean, it's not before insurances would pay for it, so people didn't have to pay out of pocket. But now it's very costly. Like if, let's say somebody wants a circumcision, costs anywhere from like $450 to almost over $2,000 to $5,000, depending on whether the child needs anesthesia or not. And that's general anesthesia. It's not talking about local. $450 would be local in a doctor's office with a pediatrician. But also the insurance will only pay for it, I believe, if the child has 3 urinary tract infections in a year or something like that, then that's when they deem the circumcision, you know, it has medical merit. So.
Right. Well, that's that varies from place to place. But the reason doctors do it is because they are victims themselves, and they are suffering from a compulsion. And that compulsion doesn't allow them to stop for anything that we tell them. They don't want to learn the facts about what's going on there. They are compelled to do this. They're essentially saying, this happened to me. It shouldn't have been done to me, but I'm going to make sure that nobody else can go through life with this, with this foreskin either. And that's the tragedy of it, because this compulsion is what drives it. And so.
And you're right with that.
We have to.
Go ahead. No, you can
go ahead. We have to have a law for women. A female genital mutilation law was passed in 1997 by sponsored by Pat Schroeder of Colorado. And theoretically, it's illegal to do males because of the 14th Amendment, which says that all persons are protected equally. So in other words, if a female is protected under the law, then a male would also be protected under the law. So it the combination of the FGM law of 1997 plus the 14th Amendment makes it definitely illegal to perform a circumcision in America, but no one is enforcing it because it's a cultural norm and because they simply don't get it. But we get it, and we're telling people what's going on, and it's an atrocity, a cruel, senseless act. Totally unnecessary.
I do agree with you on that. Because of my experiences, like I said before, I was on the other side of the coin, and because I was just on the treadmill with everybody else, and I was just following the social norm that people had put into practice. And it wasn't until I just started seeing so many botched circumcisions and the fact that doctors didn't even care. I mean, they weren't the ones taking the babies to the parents. I was, you know, and I was there hearing the screams. I was there left to console the babies, that I really started looking at it differently. And also because I was working with Dr. Paul Fleiss, who was a very, he was such an activist against circumcision. And I really learned a lot from him. And I remember when he came to give a lecture to us at UCLA in my pediatric nurse practitioner program, you know, I was hooked, and I wanted to learn more, and I got the pleasure to work with him for a few months when he was still alive and practicing. And he really did teach me a lot. And I would see these people come in, and he would, you know, explain to me that he would circumcise before. And I think 2 of his sons were circumcised, and he chose not to circumcise his last son. So he had a very interesting philosophy. So I started to change my mind. And now with my patients, I ask them, like, okay, well, why do you want to circumcise your child? And they don't know. They say, they think it's, oh, it's cleanliness. That's the first thing that everybody says. And there's really no valid research that says that anyway. And the other thing is, oh, well, the cousins are circumcised. Well, is the father circumcised? No. Or it's the father circumcised, so I guess we have to all keep it the same thing. So there's no real valid thing. So I go in there and I really try to explain, like, how to take care of the penis, you know? And a lot of people, it's so taboo. Like, they're, oh, you know, and I was like, it's an organ. I mean, we should be very socially acceptable of that. You know, you should be able to teach the child how to clean himself, you know? It's kind of like a hand or a foot. It's the same thing, you know? And you just have, you know, and so they're just so concerned. They're like, it's not going up, and the kid is 4 years old. But, you know, and then we can go into cleanliness and caring for an uncircumcised penis. Is that your expertise as well? Can you talk about that
thing,
too? Uh-huh, go ahead.
the most important thing is to not forcibly retract the foreskin, because it is attached. It's not adherent. It is attached to the glans, penis. And if you force it back, you're skinning the glands alive. So you have to know that. And many doctors and nurses don't know that and do it all the time. We have hundreds of cases every year that we have to deal with on this score. As far as the late Paul Fleiss is concerned, he was a dear friend of mine, and he said that he did over 100 circumcisions, and then he finally heard the screams of the baby, and that stopped him in his tracks, and he never did another one after that.
Right. I don't think you've ever... I think a lot of people would change their tune if they were there like I was and heard those screams. I mean, it's just to do that to a little baby, it's crazy. And it's only a cosmetic thing and has no real medical balance. I mean, I pulled some studies that say, men in Africa said it was cleaner. And before they were having this whole AIDS thing, it cuts down on AIDS or HIV. Transmission. What do you think about that?
It increases the risk of AIDS transmission. The studies that the Gates Foundation is using to push African circumcision is creating the greatest scandal in the history of American medicine. It's tragic. And that is just, it's just huge that these men are all being, adult men are being fooled into thinking that, but if they have their foreskin removed, they're less likely to want to use a condom, and therefore the risk of getting AIDS is increased. And also, if they have any anesthesia during surgery, there's a 30% likelihood they'll get AIDS from that, according to African studies, because they don't know how to sterilize their equipment. It's mind-blowing.
That is, this is a great point that you're bringing up, that the Gates Foundation is doing the study. Why? I mean, this is so ridiculous. Why is tech getting their hands dirty in medicine, in these studies?
Because Bill Clinton and Bill Gates are both circumcised, and they're blind to this thing.
But Bill Gates is also in charge of the vaccines. Bill Gates is in charge of the seeds. Come on, America, wake up.
Bill Gates is doing wonderful things. And actually, Melinda Gates is one of my heroes because I've spent my entire life as a birth controller. And Melinda Gates, who is Catholic, is very much in favor of having women all over the world have access to birth control. And so I really admire her for that. And I'm just terribly distressed at the Gates Foundation. And of course, Bill Gates is ultimately responsible, but there are people in that foundation who are terribly concerned about keeping circumcision going. And it's dying out, there are these last gasps that go on. And this is one of the biggest, and it is a major scandal.
Right. It's very fascinating and interesting to me. And of course, we're learning more and more about it now because information is so easy to access now with social media, with the internet, and with all that stuff. It's easy just to pull up. So Iceland now, so circumcision is banned in the Netherlands, for sure. That's what my research showed. And I think it was banned in 2010. Iceland now tried to ban it, and several nurses, midwives, and physicians were in back of it, but that ban just got knocked down because the religious organizations, the Jewish religion and the Muslim religion, won. Okay, so religion won over medicine, which is interesting. What do you have to say about that?
Well, yes, it is sad, but other Scandinavian countries are also in the process of trying to ban it. The important thing to know is this, that Jewish babies do not have to be circumcised to be Jewish. To be Jewish, you have to have a mother who is Jewish. That is it. And so there is a website, Celebrants of Brit Shalom, which has 200 rabbis who approve of the ceremony without the cutting. And they will go anywhere nearby there where they live and perform the ceremony and not do any cutting. So that proves, of course, to me that if all these rabbis, who are very knowledgeable people, think it's okay not to be circumcised and still be Jewish, then it's okay. And it's only a bunch of diehards that are standing in the way of no longer harming little Jewish boys.
Yeah, it's very fascinating because, like I said, I had the rabbi on for part one of Cut It or Leave It with this episode. And what he said was he agreed that it's not for cleanliness. And he wanted to make sure that everybody knew that. And that basically it is to gain a greater connection with God. So that's what the belief is. So there's no health benefits. It's not for cleanliness, but it's just all to get like a sobering connection with a higher power.
Okay, but you know that the second most famous Moses in the Jewish religion, Moses Maimonides, in the 11th century said that circumcision should never be done except for reasons of pure faith, because it definitely, and that's the quote, and the reason is because it definitely harms the man. He admitted that. And so, but of course, how can you do it for pure faith if you don't consent? The baby can't consent. You have to wait till you're exactly old enough and then consent.
That's my biggest issue. So basically, right. Go ahead.
Yeah. Basically Moses Maimonides is saying you shouldn't do it because you can't do it. At least you shouldn't do it on babies because they can't do it for reasons of pure faith.
I totally agree with you, you know, and so I'm reading this article right now, and like I had mentioned before, this article is claiming that circumcision protects against urinary tract infections. I had never heard that before until I started pulling this research. I mean, the sexually transmitted disease one, that's the one that they've been reported and stuff, but why are they saying this? I don't understand. Go ahead.
Some of that history. Basically, Dr. Thomas Wiswell was a military doctor out at Tripler Army Hospital in the middle of the Pacific Ocean on a little tiny island called Oahu, which we all know. But he was in the middle of nowhere, and he wanted to get to Walter Reed. So he knew that pleasing his buddy, his superiors, would be good if he could figure out a way to find an excuse for circumcising. And by God, he studied urinary tract infections. And the studies are clearly impossible for him to have done. There was far too much data that he couldn't possibly collect, that he alleged to have collected in his studies. And number two, even if so, you have to do 100 circumcisions to possibly prevent one urinary tract infection, which can be easily treated with antibiotics. So, but the point is that the people who want to do circumcisions take that information and say it prevents urinary tract infections, which is total nonsense. And so it goes. And there are about 29 or 30 people in the world who are committed to pushing circumcision for all it's worth. And there are some, you know, have done 30,000, 40,000 circumcisions on babies. There's one in Brisbane, Australia, and there's one in Victoria, British Columbia, that do them by the thousands.
Wow.
And it's totally, you know, they're monsters. They're monsters. And yeah. I won't hesitate to say.
I think we were talking before the podcast a little bit about the South Koreans. Like South Korea is also a huge part of the world that they do a lot of circumcisions on. And they actually make face creams. And I sent you those articles on how celebrities are buying, you know, spending $650 on facials and very expensive face creams because it's made from these Korean baby foreskins. Can you talk a little bit about, what's in the foreskin?
It is an extraction from a piece of skin that came from a young person far, far away, and they somehow figured out how to extract.
It's foreskin from a Korean baby. That's what it is.
Who comes up with this? I don't think, it's not like I'm lying there with little pieces all over my face.
Who thinks of collecting it having it for, we'll do something with this
and
someday.
And why didn't we come up with that?
Right.
Yeah, and so we call it, I call it the penis facial. And I think when you see how good it is to your face, you too will run to your local facialist and say, give me the penis. It's gonna listen. Give me the penis.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to say.
I'm never going to say
that. Maybe make it smaller.
No, I don't even understand why that is a thing that you'd put that into your skin. Why do you want that? You know what's going to happen? Penises are going to start growing out of you're going to have little tiny...
Little penises?
Like, that's what karma is going to do. You're going to have tiny baby Korean...
I'm here going...
Korean...
Let it not be a whisker or a peen. Let it... Yeah, I'm good here.
Well, first, as many people would imagine, in most of Asia, the circumcision was unheard of. But in 1950, the Korean War, American doctors were over there, and they persuaded their Korean colleagues to do this. And because Korea is a very conforming nation, South Korea, you know, if somebody says we got to do something, they do it. They did it, and they not only circumcised all the babies. They circumcised young boys in school, teachers they came back really completely defeated by having had this done to them. And it also did it to old men who spent most of their lives fully intact with no problems whatsoever because of peer pressure. Everybody had to get circumcised. The numbers were over 100% because you're normally measuring babies and they're doing many more than babies. So it was crazy. And now they're beginning to regret it, and they're backing off. But this was not part of their culture until America introduced it, which was, another extreme, what can we call it?
Catastrophe.
And certainly a tragedy, but catastrophe, right. And but Korea's the only country like that. America's the really bizarre one. The rest of the world doesn't do this except for the Jews and the Muslims.
Right, it's correct. I think Italians do, though. I think circumcision, I'm Italian, you know. I never, next time I go, I'll have to bring up the topic and ask it with my male cousins and stuff. They love asking me tons of questions and over the dinner table and over such amazing, great family dinners. We have these medical discussions and they just bombard me with all kinds of questions. But this would be an interesting topic. I mean, they don't even mind that we're eating and they're talking about gross stuff. But I'll have to ask that. But going back to my question, can you talk a little bit about the cells that are found in the foreskin of the penis? I think.
Well, basically it's epithelial cells, which are the cells all over our body. That's the skin. The skin is epithelial cells. And what you do with a foreskin is you can take it and spread it out on a gauze, and it can grow. It can be nourished, and the cells can be grown. And usually they're used as a testing bed, a sensitive epithelial testing bed, like testing on skin. But this is now not on a person. And they test all kinds of products that way. But the idea of putting the cells in a cream, I think, for instance, if Oprah knew what she was getting, I don't think she would do that.
Apparently they know. I mean, Sandra Bullock knows. They know it's these creams come from the baby penises of South Koreans. So here it is. It's the epidermal. Okay, so it's a facial. It's EGF Hollywood Facial. That's the name of the facial, and it's a cleanse. And so it's an epidermal growth factor serum derived from the progenitor cells of the human fibroblast taken from Korean newborn baby foreskin. It claims to help develop collagen and elastin.
Well, they also use American baby foreskins.
Do they really?
Certainly.
Oh, wow.
They have been for decades.
Oh, wow. I know. I discussed this topic with the rabbi, and I asked him what happens to the foreskin after it's circumcised in a ceremony. And he said it has to be buried. Like, and it's a separate ceremony. So, which is interesting. I was like, people are making facial cream now.
I've just thought of something very important we need to talk about, and that is, what is the function of the foreskin? And the function of the foreskin is to keep the glands soft and moist. It's to keep the opening of the glands where one urinates open. A great number of people who are circumcised get thickened callus on the glands because it's not being protected anymore. And that narrows the opening, and they sometimes, many times, have to have surgery to open that. But think about it for a minute. What is the function of the penis? The penis erects in order to get another generation of human beings on the earth. Now, when it erects, it becomes larger and longer. Now, where does the skin come from to cover that penis? That is what the foreskin is. It's the skin that is used to cover an erection. And when you don't have that skin, all kinds of bad things happen. The penis is forced back into the body. The penis is much less long than it was before. It's much smaller than it was before. Now, what parent wants to reduce the size of their child's penis? I can't imagine, if they understood this, that they would do this.
That is a great point that you bring up, you know. It's so funny. This thought just came into my head. I get a lot of teenagers asking me how big their penises are going to be. I don't know. But it is a great point to bring up. And I think in my own education, you know, when I educate patients now and they're asking me all kinds of questions, this is a great point to bring up. You know, why would you want to shrink your child's penis? It's excellent.
I would like to ask all of your nurses that are listening to this to please consider talking to their millennial friends about this issue and to simply say, please look into it before you have a child. That's all we can ask. We can't make you do whatever. If you decide to do it, God help you, but do it. You'll do it. If you don't look into it, what happens is that you've just given birth to your first son, and the doctor comes into the room when you're under the influence of anesthesia and makes you sign a consent form to circumcise the kid. It happens hundreds of thousands, if not millions of times. They are determined to get you. And they are committing an atrocity. They're asking you to sign to commit an atrocity. It's mind-boggling, but that's what's going on. And so if you look into it beforehand, you might come to your senses and not want to harm your child like this.
I totally agree on that. Excellent point that you bring up. So you just went to a conference on circumcision in San Francisco. Anything new that was discussed? Anything going on in the world? Is there a decrease in circumcision? I'm guessing there's a decrease worldwide, but anything that you can share?
Well, it's hard to measure. What's happening is two surveys in America, recent surveys, one I think was in 2014 and one was in 2018, showed that the number, percentage of people in America who think it's not a good idea went from 10% to 14%. Now that's shocking in it, how few there are, but the point is it's going up. And all we need to do is get to about 20 or 25% and we'll have a critical mass, enough people so that we can make some laws that will outlaw it so that doctors who are compelled to do this can no longer do it without consequences. And it is total fraud. It's a total fraud to do this. And if a doctor gets sued for fraud, his malpractice insurance won't cover it. So he will have to pay out of his own pocket. And that will stop a lot of doctors, I think, from doing this.
It's very
interesting. But nothing else will. They're determined to keep going until they die.
And in California, in 2015, Governor Brown vetoed a bill that would make circumcision illegal. The person who was pushing for this bill, though, she wasn't a medical person. I think maybe if she was a medical person and she was a doula, but if she had more pertinent information, like if it was someone like you and really educating people on the harmful effects of it, I think it would have passed. But it was just, it was interesting. I didn't even know personally that that was on the ballot or anything. I just found it because I was doing the research. And of course I was practicing in 2015, but I had no clue. You know, sometimes they put these things on the bill and they don't tell medical professionals, or they, you know, they don't educate us enough, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast, is to get the word out on these types of issues.
There was another bill in San Francisco. It was done by petition, and it was on the ballot and it was voted on. But actually, no, I take it back. It was, they got the petition going, but a judge made a ruling that they couldn't go on the ballot, which is totally bizarre, in my opinion. She was way out of her league.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Did you want to repeat that again? You were a little muffled there.
She had no right to prevent that petition, which had been signed by tens of hundreds of thousands of people in San Francisco, from going on the ballot.
Wow. That's crazy. It is a political thing. You wouldn't think that circumcision is political, but it's very politically hot. It's very religiously hot and everything.
Would you do it to your puppy?
Oh my gosh, no. I have a friend who has the most adorable pit bull, and he was just always getting out, and he's old. I think he's almost 12 years old now, and he had never been castrated. You know, he'd never been neutered. And he said, no, it's going to change his personality, you know, and it's kind of almost the same thing, you know, and stuff. And I mean, with that, it's a little bit different, but because, you know, I don't know. It's pretty, it is a crazy debate. I did bring up to you in our phone conversation about that theory that, when a baby is circumcised, that there is an increase of testosterone to the body. Do you know anything about that? I mean, I didn't do enough research. I just heard it on someone's podcast because they were talking about circumcision and they were talking about Iceland and everything like that. And so this is his theory. So I reached out to this person and I asked him, where is your research at? And so he says, oh, I'm consulting with people and I'll get back to you. So What is your take?
I'm not aware of a study like that.
Yeah, I had never heard of it either, that it increases the testosterone, but it would be interesting to see. Who knows? I mean, who knows if anybody's really tested it? But anyway, this has been an amazing discussion, Dr. Dennison. Do you have anything to add as we wrap up?
Well, it causes them to join the movement to stop it. That's one thing it does. But it's very traumatic and upsetting to the woman. It can totally alienate the woman from her child for the rest of his life.
It's very interesting.
Child, yeah, totally, totally. And there's a book coming out. A book's coming out where a doctor a gentleman remembers the first 6 days of his life. And he remembers the circumcision, and he remembers the two women standing over him while the doctor was talking to them about what he was doing. And he knows that that's why he never married. So this is the kind of information that people, you know, this is going to be a revolutionary type of book, somewhat like the near-death experience books that came out about 30 years ago and are now coming out in.
Do you know who the author is on that? I would love to, you know, later you can send me information on this, but I'm very fascinated on this. And I mean, I have a project myself that involves the penis. It is a documentary, you know, I'll fill you in when we're done with the podcast. Some of my friends who have helped me with this podcast know I've pitched it already. And we're getting ready to film the teaser reel for Indiegogo in order to get funds and stuff to make the documentary. And basically, I was speaking to many males about circumcision, and they said they wished they had a choice. But I think, I, you know, personally, I date a lot, and I do see a lot of issues with men lately, you know, and I kind of study this. I always wanted to be an anthropologist, so it very fascinates me. And I feel that I'm able to talk to men. You know, I try to have an open conversation with them so that they can speak to me about these things, because they can't speak to almost anyone about them. You know, it is a very private thing, which is why I want to base my documentary on it. But it is very fascinating, and I'm glad this gentleman is writing this book right now. It is the time, you know, because I think so many people are having issues and they don't understand why. So it's like some kind of that hidden trauma that may have been had at infancy.
When his book comes out, I can get him in touch with you, and then you can interview him. Yeah,
that would be great. That would be awesome. Definitely. And stuff. Well, anything you would like to promote, Dr. Dennison, anything?
Well, if you or if you're curious about what I have to say, you can go on YouTube, put in my name, George Denniston, MD, and you'll see several things there. One is a 9-minute statement against circumcision, and the other is advice to parents-to-be, in which I make the case for the fact that no American obstetrician, or most American obstetricians, should not be allowed anywhere near a woman in labor. It's that bad.
Wow.
It's that bad. They should be. And as you may or may not know, the National Health Service in Great Britain has recently come out and said women who are healthy should not give birth in a hospital anymore. They should give birth at a birthing center or at home. They made that statement. And that's what I'm saying too, because going to an American obstetrician is fraught with problems. They lack respect for women too often. They will not follow birth plans. They do far too many C-sections. They do episiotomies, which are contraindicated.
Oh, yeah.
They cut the placenta, they cut the cord too fast, and on and on. And they, of course, last but not least, they circumcise. They cut off the penis, the normal penis of a normal baby boy without his permission.
Excellent. And do you have a website as well?
Oh, yes. DoctorsOpposingCircumcision.org.
And that's DoctorsOpposingCircumcision.org. Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Denniston. It has been a pleasure. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Yeah, this is a great discussion. I love it. We're so in alignment. Thank you, everybody who's listening to this podcast. You can go ahead and give us comments. Go to our GoFundMe page, Nurses and Hypochondriacs, and donate. You can also follow us on Instagram, on Rogue Nurse Media, and also on Facebook under Nurses and Hypochondriacs. And you could go to our website if you'd like to get in contact with us, www.roguenursemedia.com. Thank you so much. Till next time, Nurses and Hypochondriacs.